Good evening. I am Elena Kalinowska, Director of Public Programs, and it's wonderful to see you here during this windy evening. This is our first Meet the Artist talk in this season, and it'll be Phoebe Greenberg who will join us to discuss her most recent film and new works, together with the Hirschhorn's curator, Kelly Gordon. Kelly Gordon has been running a black box for many years, and it is known for presenting up-and-coming as well as well-known international artists to the DC area. Let me tell you a little bit about forthcoming programs. The film series that Kelly Gordon is also in charge of is starting next Thursday, March 4th. And our next Meet the Artist program is with John Gerard, who is a directions artist. His exhibition is on the third floor. And that particular program will be on March 18th. So I hope that you will join us as well. I'd like to acknowledge here Lawrence A. Cohen and Ringler Associates for their support of Black Box. Now let me do an artist introduction now. Phoebe Greenberg was born in Ottawa, Canada, and now lives in Montreal. With the roots in the theater, Phoebe is an artist and business professional dedicated to culture. In addition to all her work, Phoebe is also the founder and director of DHC Art Foundation for Contemporary Art in Montreal, a museum that brings Montreal some of the most compelling art of our time. She also heads a music and film production company called FI, which has become a laboratory for cultural research in the field of music, film, new media, and architecture. Next Floor, a short film conceptualized and produced by Phoebe and directed by Denis Villeneuve, has participated in about 150 festivals worldwide, and of course is now in our black box. Curator Kelly Gordon specializes in film, video, and new media, and organizes, as I said, all of the work presented in the black box. She also put together the Direction John Gerard exhibition, which is on view on the third floor. Among other, she has also been one of the four curators of the Cinema Effect exhibition, which was presented here in 2008, and which will be touring in Spain. Please join me in welcoming Phoebe and Kelly to the stage.
Great.
Now I can go.
No. I guess first I should say that I found this film at the Rotterdam Film Festival. It was shown on a big screen as part of a film presentation, and in fact it was a film that was before a biopic on Jean-Claude Van Damme, which I never got to see because I ran out to find out who was involved in this film. I was so impressed with it, and I'm presuming that everybody in the room has seen Next Floor. So let's ask Phoebe some questions, and then you all can ask Phoebe some questions. And I guess the first logical thing is for you to tell us more about yourself and your background, which you mention a little bit here, and how it led to this fantastic project.
I think fundamentally I've had a preoccupation with the apocalyptic consequences of some of our actions. I spent 20 years in the theater, and I found that I had reoccurring themes. And I felt that this medium, although I've never been a filmmaker, I felt that it was an excellent opportunity to delve into this world, but leave a trace.
Well, you talk about the building in this as inspiring your wanting to make something, but how did it lead into this particular narrative?
Well, I think there were a couple of things that happened. One, as it was mentioned, I directed and founded DHC Art, which is a foundation for contemporary art, located in Old Montreal. So we gutted the building for the exhibition spaces. And in order to pay homage to the building and document it, we did a QuickTime movie over the years that it took to transform it. When now I'm presently transforming this particular building, and in order to document it, I didn't want to do the same process. So I thought, well, we have this incredible playground. We can do anything we want because the building's going to be destroyed regardless. And I said, well, let's write something. And the working title was actually Meat. I thought of the dinner party of the bourgeoisie because I wanted to find something that was straightforward, that didn't require dialogue, that was really an aesthetic piece. So that's kind of was the initial motor to getting the piece done.
And with short film, I always ask people, why short film, and how do you define what the duration should be? I mean, I think we could watch them go down a few more. How did you form what would be so captivating? Because a lot of film doesn't really work so well in the black box, but when I saw this, I immediately thought this would be a perfect thing for our space.
Well, I thought a lot about it, like what was the motivation of making a short film, you know, because I think that there's installations, like right now we have Eyalisa Attila in our museum, and, you know, she creates her pieces specifically for the gallery experience. And the motivation is that it's an oeuvre. And I think that the same similar motivation we had with making this film was that it was not so much that it was with the intent of so much making a film, it was sort of with the intent of doing an oeuvre. And I think that there is I stuck in my French, un temps juste, there's a correct, like there was no intention of saying, oh, it's got to be 13 minutes long or it's got to be 9 minutes long. It was really the time that we felt resulted in accurately telling the story.
And how much did people who came, did you do an open call audition? How did you find these faces?
Well, the auditioning process was a hoot, actually, because the line producer and called up all the agents and said, please send us your most unusual people. and about 70 people showed up. And it was interesting because Denis Villeneuve, who's a filmmaker, had generally run auditions where he was more of a psychological exchange, and I understood that when I walked into the foyer prior to the studio, I thought this isn't going to work for any psychological exchange. So we created some exercises, theatrical exercises, like the scale of laughter that from my previous life. And what it did, it allowed us to establish a chorus and see how these actors would work well together in a very more of a physical and organic way. And it was interesting. So it was kind of pairing off people and then also because of their looks, some of the aesthetic came after.
How much did they know about it when they came to the call, about what it would be and what it would involve?
We gave them a synopsis. I don't think they realized that they would be covered in flour. And we had the two kitchens, one with that obviously had the aesthetic-looking grotesque, and then we had the edible food. But unfortunately, I mean, of course, we were very sanitary, but they still had to sit and eat looking at the rhinoceros or the Bambi, Carpaccio.
And I must say about the rhinoceros, I know that was your logo image, and in fact, I'm sure that of, 300 films that were in Rotterdam, this poster everywhere with this gigantic rhinoceros head was what made me make sure that I saw it. However, when we had it here, we felt we needed something that told more about what the film was like. So we used the actress with the cup as our logo image here. But where did these kinds of things come from?
Well, it's a funny story because the art director had found a taxidermist who was sort of getting rid of his things. And I mean, he had this collection of unbelievably exotic animals, and the whole notion of the exotic animal is that it pushes that limit of the unsustainable You know, the fact that these people, no meat exists anymore, there's no vegetation, and these people are eating
the last.
Stumbling on this, we were able to create dishes based on what he had. And at one point I drew the line because he had a baby seal, and I said, no, please no. But the rhinoceros we couldn't part with, so now he lives in the middle of our office.
Well, when I saw it, it was at the time that the market was crashing, and I wonder, was that something that was happening while the production was underway, or that was after? Because I think a lot of people who see it now, that you can't help but feel, especially as they go down and down, that there's this endless, just when you think it's the end and there's more, it seems to have a lot of resonance with socio-political things that are going on. So,
well, I think it was incredible timing. We didn't anticipate the crash to the level that happened, but I think that there was a general feeling, certainly in the real estate market, and that things were going to burst at some point in time. I don't think anybody anticipated. Certainly, it wasn't written for that reason.
As a response.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's my obsession. So, but by the time we actually got the film made and it went out to the festival circuit, it took on more and more resonance, I think, due to the economic crisis.
Well, and when I found it, which was this time last year, almost exactly, I thought, how fast can I get it on the screen? Mm-hmm. Hoping that by the time, and they said, oh, well, it won't open till December. And I thought, oh, well, by then everything will have calmed down. So that's not the case at all. And it continues to have, I think, and will always have this kind of power because of all the different things that it touches on. So, and was there ever any temptation to have any dialogue, or... It almost feels a little bit like a dream, too, because of the sort of tonalities in the background and this sort of hovering image.
Well, I think part of it was we wanted the idea that the building had a life of its own. So if you listen to the soundtrack, you know, like you'll get the African drumming and you'll get the distorted waltz. But the idea was that, you know, the cracking of the floors and, you know, the powder that falls, is that you kind of felt something oppressive, somewhat controlled by the environment. And these people, regardless of what they would try to do or to sustain their lifestyle, they were going to fail. So the idea of dialogue puts it in a more... It's a difficult subject to talk about. So I felt that, you know, we wanted the bouffonnerie, and that dark comic approach, and it was Jack Davids who came up with the idea of them going through the floor, you know, and I think that said it all, you know.
Well, and it seems like it would be a special effect. Were there things that were special effects now that we know that you were actually crashing through the floor for?
You know, we did it in 5 days actually, and we wanted to avoid that you saw the special effects. We tried to keep a little bit of a rhythm of an old movie, like when the waiters are going down the stairs, we sped up the film. You know, there's an aesthetic that is definitely, you don't think special effects, first and foremost. But we had 2 days in front of a green screen where we tied these poor people to chairs and shook the floor. And in fact, there's one actor who's quite plump and decided to dress up in that green suit so he would disappear, and then he floated around Kentucky Fried Chicken, and it was very funny. It was a great group of people to hang out with, and they were very patient despite the horrific experience.
Would they ever make another movie with you? What was the closing party like? Was everyone so relieved not to have to be sort of
you know what, people
covered
were cool.
Or
they
yeah,
were,
they were.
You know, Denis Villeneuve is a really charming man, and he just made it fun for everybody. And it was the crew came in with this incredible desire to do this project, and it created a really great family experience because it's more theatrical than a very traditional filmmaking process. So.
Well, that's coming from you too, probably. And this, I mean, really, you, with what special effect do you need with those faces? The faces are kind of do it all. I mean, it could be a photo gallery of characters. They're so fantastic and go so much with what the topic is. Can you go back and tell me more about the music? Because that also seems so perfectly to pull you in and put you through this experience.
Well, I think, it all comes back to the notion of parody and mockery and that whole ritual of the world of the bouffon. They're a gang. You know, there's not one bouffon. And the ritual, the African drumming, you know, you feel something is foreboding. And it kind of brings it out of a context, you know, it's unpredictable and somewhat subtly integrated. And again, the distortion of some of the more bourgeoisie type of dinner music was intentional to again push the parody in the, of the situation.
And what about the lighting designer? Because that seems like an awfully tricky role in this one.
Well, surprisingly enough, because the building was is abandoned, it has glass block in the windows, so it had a natural diffusing quality. It's when you walked into the building, it has that creepy quality. So we had an excellent DOP, and we really did it kind of old Hollywood with bringing in lights and. But kind of enhancing what was already there. Like, there's practically no set decoration. You know, we put a hole in the floor and just about, you know, and bought a chandelier. You know, I mean, a lot of what you see is what was existing.
And when you had it together, did you say, we just documented the building, or did you have this other life that the film has taken on in mind at any point?
The whole result of Next Floor, I mean, I was thrilled when I, you know, was sort of sitting through the editing process and going, wow.
This is great.
This is kind of cool, you know, but I never anticipated, my ambitions were not to become a filmmaker in kind of a traditional way. So the fact that it traveled the world and people get inspired is fabulous.
And what were some of your favorite places that the film has been shown?
I mean, because I work in the contemporary art world, I tried to go to places that I could kind of, like I went to Bilbao's because I wanted to see the Guggenheim. And that the theater was kind of cool where it showed. And I mean, I haven't traveled that much with it. I traveled out of curiosity to see also who we could meet. If Cannes was fun, of course. We did go to Sundance. And periodically, you know, but now it's coming to the end of its career.
Well, I don't know. I mean, what's the market for short films? And we were trying to pull you guys into maybe making an edition available, like at the bookstore or something like that, since we have a work by Priscillian Weiss that we actually market, and people like to collect it and have it and own it and see it again. And is there that kind of arc for this, do you think? Or?
Well, you know, that's one of the things that we're trying to figure out in FI and in trying to do really good artistic-driven projects and find out what is the best way to diffuse it, you know, post-internet. So, I mean, I think you could see Next Floor on a telephone. I mean, not a telephone. Yes,
cell
on a telephone, yeah. And
cell phone.
So there are different ways that people. But I'm really happy with the gallery experience because we hadn't anticipated that at all. So that's very cool. Thank you.
Oh, listen, I was so thrilled when I immediately saw it and tracked down Danny, who was working with the film and promoting it there, and I said, I have to have this. And he said, well, what are you going to do with it? And I said, well, I have a film program, but really I think it belongs as an installation, and I think it's worked for us.
Yeah.
And moreover, what I want to ask you is, what's next? Are you working on another film project? And
We have another short film that's in the final editing process, which is, again, done by a Montreal filmmaker, not Denis Villeneuve. His name is Pedro Perez, and it's inspired by a theatrical play by one of my favorite authors called Marie Brassard, who's also from Montreal. And it's a film with no dialogue, and it conquers a rather large theme of a love story, and it's sort of born in the subconscious of a man who's lost his, a colonel who's lost his battalion, I guess is the word, destroyed, and he's just dying, and it becomes surrealistic and very beautifully shot. The man is a visual artist, so I think we're going to kind of stay in that realm of art films that can be shown across
platforms.
Yeah, platforms. And then we have a documentary on global warming, which is we've been shooting now in Alaska and in Copenhagen and New York for the last year. So again, the whole notion of green is very a strong preoccupation for
us.
And
when will these be ready?
Jimmy is the working title, and it should be ready probably in six. Well, we hoped for Cannes, but we'll see.
If you're ready, will you come back and be with us for the Environmental Film Festival next year and show it and talk about it?
Absolutely, absolutely. I would love it.
Great. Well, this is called Meet the Artist, so I'm presuming that a lot of people out there may have some questions for Phoebe. So we'll open the floor. Milena.
Have you met him? Can you talk a little bit about his work?
I haven't met him, but I have seen La Classe Morte. There are a couple of notions. One is obviously the aesthetic of these very stylized personalities. Also this sense of the interior and the exterior. Again, a feeling of decay of the bourgeoisie. Also, some writers I've worked with, Daniel Harms, a Russian absurdist. So, again, I seem to gravitate to the same themes, I guess.
The big important themes, I think you should say. The big stuff. Are there some more questions? Is the mic? Jenny, the mic? Yes.
Yeah, this is probably ought to be the last question, if at all. But how did you go about raising the money to do this?
It was in French we say un coup de cœur. So a lot of it came out of my pocket. Some of it came out of exchange of services. We also took our time, meaning like the special effects, people wanted to be a part of it. And so they would do it on the side because we had no deadline. It wasn't ambitious in the sense that we had to get to a film festival. It was really done over a year so we could kind of keep our costs fairly low. Well, within reason. We're going to rewind.
The question was, as I watched it, I began to feel for the folks who were around the table, and by the third or fourth level, it was clear that some of them were oblivious, but some of them didn't know how to stop. They were had such insatiable appetite that they didn't know how to stop, and I wondered if that was something that I just read into it, or whether that was something that you wanted us to see, to say, they can't stop, maybe you can.
I mean, I think it was certainly intentional that the desperation accelerated as they fell through the floors. And yes, it was intentional that at one point in time that kind of dilemma or that pressure creates different reactions. I mean, there was sort of the two men going into competition mode. There were the three, which I coined vultures, the bald men who kind of ate insatiably. There was the woman who had some inkling that this probably wasn't a good idea, and then eventually said, okay, well, I might as well. You know, so the whole pressure of the circumstances created a reaction that hopefully was a harmonious result. But yes, it was intentional. Well,
how many hours of actual eating were there?
Not that many, fortunately. But it was I would say in total maybe they were around that dinner table with the actual food that they had to eat. Maybe maximum 3-4 hours, but in two days. Although the one gentleman with the beard, he stayed at the table and kept eating. And I told him he had to stop because he was going to get himself ill. But they were really good sports, and we tried to really make sure that, you know, we kept it as minimal because they had all that dust and debris.
The sounds are sort of like...
Well, we won't go there.
In the back.
There's not really a significance. It was more that the woman, when she auditioned, she came in and she's like 6'4", and very powerfully built, and beautiful woman, but just surprisingly athletic. And we wanted to kind of, it suggested that she become sort of more the military severe. And then there was another man who you might have noticed who we decided to become more effeminate. And it was based on really doing an analysis of their aesthetic once we had, because it really had a lot of aesthetic thought, but in a organic way. We didn't have to kind of force things. So we analyzed based on the faces and the people and the building a chorus that we felt had aesthetic value. Well, I think fundamentally we tried to create a very strong texture without placing it in a particular country or era in time. So the whole notion of caught in time is excellent because that's probably what we wanted to do. We didn't want to identify it necessarily with any group of people. It was a representation of a class of people. The Salvation Army was a big help in terms of the clothing. So, you know, a lot of it was improvised based on what we could find. We worked with a dear friend of mine, Renata Morales, who's a designer in Montreal, who happens to have her workshop above our offices, and she moderned up things with, you know, again, an interpretation of an older and timeless group of bourgeoisie, but with kind of modern elements. Well, that was Denis Villeneuve's understanding and of a point of reference to make it cinematic. You know, he strongly felt that we needed to feel compassion for at least one of the individuals. I, on the other hand, but you know, he's as a filmmaker, he really made it happen. Yeah, I think that was again just to create some compassion, so that evoking more of the tragedy. I would say, I mean, I don't know the exact real hour, but probably, I think we had about 9 hours approximately. I might be off by an hour or two, forgive me. Oh, la grande bouffe, okay.
Yeah,
okay. I think I heard the word grotesque. Mm-hmm. Is that mm-hmm. possible? Yes. I'm trying to think. You know, there are certain traditions, like I've mentioned the Buffon a million times, and the Buteau, who kind of delve into that world of decay, and I think that the word grotesque is a little bit difficult to define in the context of history, you know, and because it's a reference in literature and painting, Shakespeare, gargoyles on architecture. But definitely in that, the idea of being the outsiders, you know, the like for example, a leprosy camp are excluded from mainstream society, yet they will create their own society and sometimes mock what they consider our mainstream social structure. If that makes any sense. So I guess if I had to interpret the world of the grotesque in that vein, I would say that definitely this is where we're trying to place ourselves. It was, you know what, it's an excellent question because we weren't quite sure how we were going to maneuver that. But the great thing is that it was a really wonderful collaboration because I know well enough to stay away from things that I know nothing about, you know, and at the same time, because of its highly theatrical element, like running the auditions, for example, or working a little bit with the three waiters to try to get rhythm, to discuss notions of the aesthetic value. But once it actually came to filming. He would come and talk to me, and he said it was like working with like the old time producers, which means nothing to me really. But I stayed out of the way. So it was good, because when it was time to actually do his job, he had all the tools to do it the way that he needed to do it, and he was extremely generous on collaborating and asking him for help when he needed it, and wanting to make me happy. He's a very sweet man.
There was a question. Okay.
Unfortunately, I arrived a bit late, so I was going to see the film, but I'm very much looking forward to seeing it. My question is, I'm wondering if the actors themselves, either on set or following the completion of production, shared any of their own philosophy on the project that they're involved in.
Well, we had a screening and a small get-together for the cast and crew. And I think fundamentally everybody was really happy to have been part of the experience. In terms of their politics, I think that, you know, there's a general concern about some of the issues regarding unsustainable energy, et cetera. But it was a very interesting group of people. We had people from Cirque du Soleil, you know, people who are very theatrical, and I think that given an opportunity to leave the stage and do something like this, I think was a nice experience. But as far as the result is concerned, I think nobody really knew what to expect, and I think that they were very happy to see the final cut. I think that's what you wanted to hear.
Are there any more questions?
I think it came naturally. No, we had some chorus work, you know, where rhythms with the knives, forks, you know, eating, cutting into, like the dishes themselves have a lot of personality. So like once you're cutting into a sausage, or, you know, like the DOP, like really, we targeted rhythm, we targeted, you know, again, the three bald heads. We also sped up the film slightly, so it gave that sort of Jacques Tati feel, you know. So actual direction, I think it was really a chorus work, and then he gave certain indication to, for example, the young woman who was more sympathetic to have a different point of view and separate herself a little bit from the rest of the crowd. And then there were just some big personalities. I got to tell you, the man with the breathing tube, it was my idea to give him a breathing tube because he wouldn't shut up. Because the last thing you want to do in a film where is to see people talking and you don't hear any sound, you know? So I said, give him a breathing tube. And it worked.
You mentioned the role of the chorus many times, and I wondered, were there times in the filming where it was only one person
Generally, they had to be all together. The only person that had some exterior gaze was the maître d', and then of course the musicians, you know, were sort of a band apart. But again, everybody was on the set the whole time. I mean, first of all, the building's got a few floors, not as many as we created, but so people were able to hang around, and as you saw, you know, fortunately we did it in the summer, so we caused a bit of traffic because people would go out with all this powder and sit on the steps and smoke, you know, and then cars would drive by and go, ooh.
The film is amazing. And one of the things I like about it is
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the color palette or how your life is such beautiful camera?
In our head, well, it was interesting because it's amazing what happens when you Google Meet. You know, I mean, it started out, I started looking at vultures and looking at meat, and there's one dish where you see sort of brains in an oyster. That's a picture I pulled off the internet. So when we sat down with the art director, it was already that sort of gray tone exists in the building because the light is so diffused and there is that decay and then the color palette, we just tried to keep it in a somber with just kind of moments of color because we wanted the accent on the gore. It was a very interesting experience because I didn't want anything green. You know, I wanted it all to be meat related, and if there was anything that was slightly vegetation, it had to be biblical, like myrrh or an olive. There were some olives, but we wanted to, you know, keep it so that it maintained that presence of that meat and blood.
Hi, I wanted to ask specifically about the opening and closing shots of the film. A friend of mine and I that saw it together had a great time debating about what that final look is supposed to be, whether or not he's inviting you to sort of be people with him, or whether he's being accusatory. And I'm sure there was some purposeful ambiguity there, but I'm curious to know your intention for that opening and closing shot.
Well, in the back, we sort of suggested that maybe the maître d', who's the lower in the bourgeoisie, servitude, it orchestrates this. So there's the four horses of the apocalypse in the back when you first, but it's muted. And then at the end, when you go into his eyeball, to me that represented the hole that they fell through.
Anyone else?
Yes, I have no request actually related to this beautiful film. Can you show
it? I think it's running, isn't it?
It's running. Where are we?
In the box.
Oh, that way.
Is it?
The film can be shown at the end of the talk if the audience is still rich.
Oh, great. Thanks, Ron.
Shall we do that now? Or do you want to do another two more questions?
Yeah.
Here.
When you were making the film about overconsumption, did you have any child conflict about the resources you were using in the film? When you were making a film about overconsumption, did you have any internal conflict or was there discussion on the set about the resources that you were using to make the film?
Yeah. Most of the animals were dead already because it was a taxidermist that we, got it from. But overconsumption doesn't necessarily mean vegetarian. It was really that we were trying to create an idea about what's left on the planet if we don't do something. So I had a couple of vegetarians on the set. And a few more after the film.
is there a story behind the chandelier? It's beautiful. Where did you find it?
In Montreal, at a chandelier store. Well, it was actually a little bit of a reference to what the building was before, because it was called Holland Crystal, and what they did is they made crystal chandeliers and goblets and things. So it was, again, going back to the homage of what it was, this building, prior to its present transformation. So that's kind of where that came from.
Thank you.
No. And that was, we had fortunately some good contacts to get some, as much film as we could. But the director wanted to shoot in 35 millimeter, and I felt that that was, for the kind of look that we wanted, I thought it was important. You know, it was done over a long period of time, because fortunately, again, Montreal's a you know, a relatively small city, and everybody knows everybody. And the director's brother works at Fake Studio, and was able to give us editing suites, and was so fascinated, and is a special effects specialist. So we kind of, again, we weren't rushed. So Denis Villeneuve was quite busy because he shot two feature films in the last 2 years. So whenever he had time, he'd go in and you know, it was kind of a labor of love. Also a good idea too. I mean, I was being a little bit flippant, but.
Right. So in the long term, you know, where could, I mean, you could think of a lot of things. You think of, you know, a small man, this man of Indian descent, or anything that could attach to that. But can you expound on that a little bit more as you've gone into the film festivals about the man with the readings? Have been really any other reactions that you've gotten from that?
Well, Montreal is a city. Well, I mean, I don't know if that's so unique anymore, but it's always struck me as we were looking for the people, again, that idea of this affects the whole planet, you know, and Montreal is a very multicultural, like, we're all immigrants, you know, so I it was cast not with that kind of political vein. It was a representation of the actual themes, which are the gluttony or the overconsumption or the bourgeoisie which exists across the planet.
Who selected and prepared the food? Did you have to have a special food specialist who would make it look good on film?
It was the art director, but and his boyfriend, and a lot of laughter and everybody coming in with a new idea. Like Bambi Carpaccio and what can we do with eyeballs? You know, it was fun. It wasn't a specialist. It was just a bunch of interesting dinner parties. It's across from where I live, and I'm the owner of it, actually. And it's being transformed into the Phi Center, which is where we do our laboratory. You know what? I stand corrected. It was a feeding tube. I just said breathing tube, sorry. It was a feeding tube. You're right.
Oh wait, we have a professional.
We have a doctor in the house.
It was a great idea.
I think so too. Anybody else?
Yeah.
The actors, in terms of building the aesthetic, were not very involved. But in terms, the work between the DOP, the art direction, obviously Denis Villeneuve, myself, and some of the key people and the costume designer, we spent a lot of time together prior to actually shooting. So I think we kind of created a really strong aesthetic based on what we already knew. But it was a lot of collaboration. And during the shoot, obviously, the actors, they all come from the theater. So they understood very quickly about trying to create this dinner table. I have no idea, but thank you for making that association.
I have a question about other art, if there were other fine arts, history of art things that were inspirations in terms of some of the visuals, because you feel that, the way that it's wrought, that it has that kind of, in every shot.
Well, I think, you know, there's that Goya texture with the dark browns and pale palette, I mean not pale, but somber palette. Nothing comes to mind quickly right now, but there's certainly that era of painting.
And then I have another question, which is, what surprised you most between whatever was the first nugget inception of something that you either wrote down or noted that ultimately came this, between that point and the end, or even now, what's surprised you the most about this project?
That it evoked a lot of inspiration by the people who made it, I think was very interesting. And unfortunately, it's jaded me for life.
No. Hopefully not.
And the fact that it was so well received. And lastly, having a very strong interest in the contemporary art world, to find it here in a completely different context. So I would say those are the three highlights.
Well, we thank you so much for coming and also for letting us show this as a black box. I think it's had some of the widest reception and strongest reception of anything we've shown there. And I am presuming that Ron is telling the truth, that we can show it, yes? For those of you who would like to see Next Floor one more time on the big screen,